I'm Steve McLaughlin from Penn State. I work with Patrick McDaniel in the Systems and Internet Infrastructure Security Lab. And today, I guess I'm going to be talking about the feasibility of some attacks we've considered against physical process control systems in light of what we read while looking through semantics detail of the Stuxnet virus that became well known about a year ago. So first, let's think about how Stuxnet actually goes about or went about attacking a real system, and in general, how malware that attacks process control systems works. The majority of things shown in this picture are typical elements you find in a regular SCADA system. And you'll notice that in the upper left, you see the actual PLC. This is the final target. I believe the original presentation this was taken from was just emphasizing the number of different ways there are to penetrate into a SCADA system. But the end goal of any PLC malware is to upload a piece of software onto the PLC that's then going to cause the physical equipment connected to the PLC to do something bad. And that could be bad in a stealthy way or bad in a destructive way, like it destroys the equipment or it destroys some raw material that's being used in a manufacturing process or whatever. So I think what made Stuxnet most famous, well, there's sort of two things that did. One was that it had an amazing delivery mechanism. It had multiple zero-day exploits, forged certificates. It could bridge an air gap via USB. It was just a very amazing mechanism. The other thing that made it famous was, of course, that it was the first thing to ever put a piece of malicious code onto a PLC. And taken directly from the Stuxnet dossier, here's a picture of the layout of one of those pieces of code. And the amazing thing about this was that despite the fact that the virus itself knew nothing about how the system works, it was able to take a piece of pre-compiled code provided to it by its authors, put it on the PLC, and allow it to do something bad to the physical plant. And of course, while we don't know this for sure, everybody speculates that in fact Stuxnet's authors had advanced knowledge of how the plant worked. And of course, if you were to take this, the code for Stuxnet, and say point it at a different process control system, probably in the best case, it would just have no effect at all and the system would just kind of stall for a bit. And in the worst case, something random would happen. But you can't just take a precompiled payload and have a nice new attack against any arbitrary system out there. So this leads us to kind of ask, well, can a piece of malware figure out how to attack a process control system on its own without any prior knowledge or perhaps very little prior knowledge and without any interaction with its author? We assume that perhaps while it's propagating through networks, it still can phone home. For example, Stuxnet called the command and control. But once it's actually in the control system looking at the PLC, we assume that it has to figure things out for itself. And that's practical both because we're assuming an adversary that's not an expert in process control systems, and we're also assuming that it might have to bridge an air gap or sit on some developer machine or something. And I suppose my knee-jerk reaction to this question is that, yes, of course it's possible. It's just a matter of breaking it up into enough small problems that can be solved one at a time. And so here I've kind of broken it down into roughly four steps, showing everything that has to happen from the time you infect a node in the SCADA system to the time that you actually have malicious code executing on the PLC. And roughly the idea is that, well, step one is obvious. You have to first somehow penetrate the system. In step two, we leverage the fact that because of the way PLC permissions are set up, if you can write the PLC, you can certainly read from it. So let's read the code and data off of the PLC to try and get some clues from it about how the plant actually should behave. Obviously, this is somewhat limited because people don't go putting full descriptions of all the little physical details of the process on the PLC, but we at least want to be able to infer some things based on the directions that it gives to physical equipment. In step three, and this is just sort of a convenient step for the dynamic payload, what you want to do is take this code and data that you've read off of the PLC and digest it into some kind of a canonical process representation. Something that you could do, say, a program analysis over. So think of it in terms of like an intermediate representation of a language that you can work with without having to know that language in specific. So the last thing then that you would obviously do is analyze this canonical representation of the process in step four and generate a malicious payload, which would then require recompiling whatever sort of high-level bad directions it is that you wanted to give to the PLC. And additionally, besides just sort of making it more tractable to solve this problem, you can also imagine that malware authors, at least in some communities, would be sharing code and data and ideas, and thus kind of leveraging nice code reuse. So ideally, in the case of a script kiddie-like attack, you would just have them specifying the actual goal that they want to be executed against the plant, because somebody else has done the somewhat harder work of writing this other code for them. And in the case of more traditional malware, this has most certainly happened. You can download, in fact, very sophisticated frameworks like Metasploit now that do all of the work for you. All you have to do is kind of pick how you want to perform the attack. Similarly, there's a bit of additional data you'll need to get over the fact that there are many different devices on the market that PLCs can manipulate, and there are also many different PLCs with different instruction set architectures. So over time, you would want to be accumulating the disassemblers for the PLC architectures and also databases of different device identification strings. But once you've accumulated all this, it's fairly straightforward, or you would assume it would be fairly straightforward then to launch this tool against any SCADA system that you had penetrated. Very briefly, before I explain the techniques that we want to use to accomplish these things, let me describe how PLCs are actually programmed. Basically, a PLC is just supposed to be a software implementation of a hardware logic relay, because that's actually, before PLCs, how people went about automating sequential systems, was they just had a big hardwired Boolean circuit. And all this does is map a set of Boolean inputs to a set of Boolean outputs. The inputs come from the sensors or limit switches or push buttons in the plant, and the outputs go to the actuators in the plant. For the sake of bookkeeping, the logic can also maintain a set of internal state variables and a set of timer variables for timed things like filling a bottle with some liquid, where if you know the volume of the bottle and the speed at which the liquid is dispensed, you just time it and then move to the next bottle. And one practical note that I should mention is that simply because of the interface to most popular PLCs, you can differentiate these four types of variables even when reading the binary code directly from the PLC. So we might not assume that we know exactly what a variable means, but at least we can tell whether or not it's a timer or an output or a sensor input or whatever. So let me give you a more concrete example of what PLC logic would look like in practice. Consider just a simple pedestrian crossing where we have this signal box, which is just kind of a low-level cheap PLC, and then we have some output signals that go to the various lights that tell the pedestrians and traffic when they can go and when they need to stop. And we also have an input, which is the little button that pedestrians use whenever they instruct the signal box that they want to cross the street. And so the idea is we have one Boolean variable per light. If all three variables read true, then all three lights could be on. Similarly, if all three are false, all three lights could be off. We then have two more variables that control the pedestrian, green and red, or in other words, walk, don't walk. And then finally, we have one Boolean input that says whether or not the button has been pressed. And you can imagine there might be an internal state variable that you would use later on to clear the fact that the button has been pressed. But for the sake of simplicity, we'll ignore that. So what does the actual logic look like? Well, here's an example of one statement in the PLC's logic that would tell you whenever it's okay to turn the pedestrian green light on. And it basically just says the pedestrian green variable should be true if the request to cross button has been pressed and the red traffic light is on. Now, we kind of make the assumption that if the red traffic light is on, then the green traffic light is not also on, but that's left to other lines of code in the program. Okay, so kind of given that little overview as to how PLCs are programmed, I'll describe some techniques now that could be used to recover a canonical view of a process from the code and data read from a PLC. And I'll note that minimally, in this canonical view, we want the set of Boolean equations that define the mapping from inputs to outputs. And ideally, we would also have some information about what output variables map to what physical devices, though we don't necessarily need that, nor can we always obtain it. So we just read a piece of binary code off of a PLC. How on earth do we convert this back into a series of logical statements? Well, first of all, you have to have a disassembler. That doesn't seem particularly hard to procure in this case. Whenever they evaluated Stuxnet, for example, they figured out the disassembly from the MC7 bytecode back to the Siemens statement list language. And in fact, most popular PLCs on the market can be disassembled into a language called instruction list, which is just part of a almost 1.5 decades long process now of standardizing PLC languages. So supposing that we have written a disassembler that takes some particular ISA and converts it into instruction list, we have a technique that we've implemented in the ML language. You could implement it however you like, though, in which you do a simple symbolic execution over the accumulators in this architecture, and then that will give you back the set of Boolean equations. Very briefly, I'll also mention that it's possible to get device data out of some larger scale industrial networks thanks to a popular solution called Profibus and Profinet that have a little over 1/4 of the market share for industrial Ethernet at this point. You need 2 steps to get device information this way. One, you just need to query the Profibus devices in your system for their unique ID. And two, you have to have a database that matches those IDs onto which device that actually is. And you can scrape that database from various websites like the Profibus website. So now we have a canonical representation, and we want to turn this into an actual attack. And you'll notice that the payload goal that the adversary specifies is read in here. I'm not really going to describe how one would go about designing a language for this. Just sort of imagine the payload goal as being glue code that connects together the modules that I'm about to describe. In other words, if I wanted to, say, open a switch in an electric substation, I would first query a module that says, find me any switches that it may be in the system, and then I would query another one that says, compile a payload to actually open them. So we won't worry about the payload goal from here on out. One thing that we could do is, if there's no Profibus information, so we can't tell what specific devices are in the plant, we might be able to tell something about the types of devices if we know the class of plant we're attacking. So, for example, if that plant contained one or more motors that were reversible, then there would be 2 variables, one variable that says if the motor is going forward and one variable that says if it's going in reverse. And if we notice that there's a time delay forced between those variables, which would be there to allow the motor to spin down before you reverse its direction, then you could almost certainly infer that those were the 2 variables in the system controlling one of the motors. And similar invariants, standards, idioms, and just best practices exist for other types of systems, be it rail automation or electrical substations. But that does require a bit more adversary knowledge about the type of system that's being attacked. So suppose that we have no information about the devices at all. We couldn't even infer device types. It may still be possible to force the system into doing something unsafe, simply because the PLC logic contains the very definition of what safe behavior is for the system. So, for example, the output variables are often connected with what's called a safety interlock, at least one or more of these safety interlocks that say, okay, if these output devices are on, then these output devices cannot be on. Otherwise, they'll conflict in some way that isn't safe. In the case of our traffic light example, this would be the 2 green lights, the pedestrian and the traffic green lights. You want to maintain this condition that says these 2 green lights are never on at the same time. Obviously, you could have a conflict then between pedestrians and traffic. The problem is the payload actually has to figure out this. It has to kind of guess this invariant, obviously. It's not going to be told, look for the safety invariant in the logic. And it will have to do that in one of 2 ways, depending on whether or not this property is explicitly stated as like an if check of some sort in the logic, or if it's implicitly stated. In other words, the logic just never violates this property. So how would you actually exploit a safety interlock in practice? First, you have to extract it, and I'll describe that momentarily. Then you have to find an assignment to the output variables in the interlock that would actually cause it to be violated. And then finally, you compile that assignment into a payload and have it execute on the PLC, thus causing the plant to execute the unsatisfactory or unsafe behavior. So how would you go about extracting a safety interlock that's explicitly stated in the code? Well, we've already written a program that can do this, and it basically it finds all the statements in the program or all the variables in the program that satisfy this condition, but it does it using program slicing. So during the Q&A, if there's more questions about that, I can describe it. If the programmer was very clever and all of the safety properties were implicit in the program definition, then it's a bit harder. You would actually need to use model checking or something like that. Fortunately, that also puts a burden on the the PLC programmer, and that now they have to make all of their safety conditions implicit. So I could talk more about the trade-offs there in the Q&A as well. Finally, because we want to be doing things like potentially stealthily hooking into process code so we only execute after some number of cycles of the process execute, or because we might want to find a terminal condition for the process, we want to infer something about its structure. And typically, PLC code will be either event-driven, meaning it waits for an event to the plant and then supervises the plant accordingly, or it will be logic-driven, in which case it will use an event loop or a timer loop to control the plant while giving minimal attention to the input from the plant. So looking at the dependency graph for the full implementation of the traffic light system I described, we can see two structures kind of pop out, and the graph is actually larger than what's shown here. But the first thing is that if you look at these T0 through T5, I believe, variables, they're actually existing in a cycle. And all the T's are the timer variables. So this cycle is actually revealing that there's a timer loop in this system. And that, of course, whenever you go back and look at the code, is the timer loop for the different phases of the lights. Similarly, we see an output variable on the top, O6, that is dependent only upon O4 and O1, and those turn out to be the pedestrian and traffic green lights. And if those are both on at the same time, they're interlocked to the alarm variable O6. And this interlocking two alarms is a paradigm we've seen in several other logics that we've looked at. So just in summary, if you break down the process of attacking a PLC automatically into a number of small steps, it seems like a more tractable problem. Probably the hardest thing is just obtaining all the different disassemblers and device IDs that you would need to deal with the diversity amongst these systems. Even if you don't know what any of the devices in a plant are, you can use safety interlocks to find a way to make the plant do something bad. And finally, existing techniques like this program control graph or like SAT-based model checking, and other things may be actually useful for the designers of dynamic malware. And just as one final note, if anybody here has access to some process control code, or at least a reasonable facsimile thereof, we would really like to use it to test out some of our techniques. So thank you very much.